Hello, everybody, and welcome to the podcast. So, in today's episode is all about cancer awareness. So, I'm going to be speaking to Tony Collier, who was diagnosed with advanced stage prostate cancer in 2017. He is an ambassador, awareness speaker, volunteer, and fundraiser for Prostate Cancer UK. He is also a trustee of Tackle Prostate. They're responsible for supporting all of the prostate cancer support groups across the UK. What's really interesting about Tony's experience is that he had no symptoms and he was also ultra marathon runner and multiple time marathon runner. Hope you enjoy the conversation and I hope it helps to spread awareness of prostate cancer amongst men. Good morning, Tony. Really appreciate your time coming on the podcast today. Hopefully we can do a lot to raise awareness around prostate cancer in men. How's things?
Yeah, good, thank you. How about you?
Yeah, I'm okay, thank you. One of the things that really shocked me when I was reading through the bio prior to this podcast was, one, how fit you were, and I'm sure you're going to go into depth about how fit you were running for ultra marathons and many marathons. And the other thing that shocked me was how there was no symptoms.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a real shock. So yeah, I'm happy to talk through all that and tell you a bit about my story.
Fantastic, Tony, I'd love to hear it.
So when I was 45, I was sent for a medical by the firm that I worked for. And the outcome of that medical was they told me I was borderline clinically obese and my blood pressure was so high that if I didn't do something about it, I'd be on drugs the rest of my life. And I guess I should have understood the fact that I was getting a little bit on the fat side because my kids used to call me Mr. Blobby. And I hated the thought of being on drugs the rest of my life. And that's really ironic because I'm now on drugs the rest of my life to keep me alive. And I thought I was a fit guy back then. I wasn't a runner back then, but I played table tennis just below county standard and I played some social squash. And the gym where I played social squash had an informal running club. So I thought, well, if I start running with them, I might lose a bit of weight and get my life back on track, reduce the blood pressure. So I changed my diet, reduced salt, reduced alcohol intake, and started running with the running club, praying that I could keep up with them. And thankfully, I could. And then 2 years later, we became a proper running club affiliated to England Athletics. And our secretary at the time said, now we're a proper running club. We should all have a marathon on our CV. And I said, you're joking, aren't you? There's no way in a million years do I ever want to run a marathon. And she nagged and nagged and nagged. And she went on for about, I don't know, 2 months. And eventually seven of us gave in and we entered the Amsterdam Marathon 2007. I was 50 in the February and the marathon was in the October. So I did my first marathon at 50. Strangely, one by one, the other six dropped down to the half marathon, leaving Billy Nomates doing his first marathon on his own. And then even to make it worse, I'm not bitter about this, honestly, they got the same medal and T-shirt that I did. So that was a real, really annoying. Anyway, I said never again, and then I went on to say never again another 18 times. I did 19 marathons between the age of 50 and 59, including all six of the World Marathon Majors. And I became a pretty decent, I was never going to be elite, you know, but I was just below a good above average club runner. I managed to do a 3:23 personal best for a marathon, which is pretty tasty, when I was 54. And then I heard about this ridiculous race in South Africa, and this was the turning point in my life medically. But I heard about this race called Comrades Ultramarathon. And we met a little old lady on a walking holiday. It's a really interesting story. And turned out she was a runner, started running late in life, and she was British national champion when she was 61 at all distances. And I asked her what her favourite race was, and she said, Comrades. And I said, I've never even heard of Comrades. So tell me what it's all about. And she said, well, it was to commemorate the fallen heroes of the First World War. And it's a 56-mile ultramarathon from Durban to Pietermaritzburg. It's got 6,500 feet of climbing and it's usually 30 degrees. And for some reason, that felt like a good challenge, you know, and I fell in love with the idea of doing Comrades. So I had a go in 2015 and I trained really, really hard, picked up a bad injury about 6 weeks before. So I knew I wasn't going to finish, but I was running it for a children's charity. So I had to start. I got to 20 miles and pulled out in agony. And I went back again in 2016 and completed it at the age of 59. I did it in just under 10 hours. It was a 4.5 hour marathon, followed by another 4.5 hour marathon, followed by the slowest 5K crawl through the streets of Durban you're ever going to imagine.
But it's safe to say that you're a very fit bloke.
I was pretty fit back then. I was 10 and a half stone. I'd lost 2.5 stone. I was really super fit. So I was a, sub-elite, ultra-marathon fit athlete. And then if you run this race 2 years on the trot, they give you a special medal, back-to-back medal. So I thought, well, I'm going to go back and do it. I was 60 in the February of 2017, and the race was on the 6th of June. Started training. And then in the February, I did the Anglesey Half Marathon, which starts on a really steep downhill slope. And every time I put my right foot to the floor, I got this searing pain through my groin. And that went away when I went onto the flat bit, so it was fine. And of course, being a runner, because runners are idiots, you ignore pain because that's what we do. So I ignored it, and it got worse. And then in the April, right at the start of April, I ran the Manchester and Paris Marathon a week apart as training runs. And when I got back from doing that, I literally was in agony. I couldn't get my right leg out of the driver's side of the car without being in extreme pain. And I realized I wasn't going to be doing the ultramarathon on the 6th of June if I didn't do something about it. So I made an appointment to see a sports injuries doctor. Monday the 8th of May, forever etched on my mind. My logic being a runner, well, you stick a cortisone injection in it and it'll be absolutely fine. No problem. And off we go. Anyway, I went to see him, and we prearranged an MRI scan. He saw the scan and then said, "Not seeing what I expected to see here. Need to rule out anything untoward. Whilst you're here, just go and have a blood test and a chest X-ray." We're going, "Well, you don't need those for a groin strain. This is obviously something serious." And I mean, something really serious never crossed my mind, But anyway, then he said to me the following day, "I've got you booked in for a CT scan, full body CT scan tomorrow." So you can imagine all sorts of extreme thoughts enter your mind, and that was pretty grim. So Tuesday the 9th of May, I went to my running club as normal, just about to go for a pint with the lads, and I got a telephone call 8 o'clock in the evening, and it was a sports injuries doctor, and he said, "Really sorry to tell you, Tony," he said, "but I'm 99% certain you've got prostate cancer." And I'm going, wow. And I was 15 minutes away from home. And I literally jumped in the car and drove home in floods of tears to break the news to my wife. And that was one of the hardest things I've ever done. I then went through 10 days of further tests, which included biopsies. In those days, the biopsies were done transrectally, which was pretty unpleasant. Bone scans. And then my wife and I went to see the urologist for the first time. And he said, "It's confirmed it is prostate cancer." He said, "But the news is even worse. It's advanced stage prostate cancer. It's broken out of the prostate and into the surrounding bones." And then he said something like, "And I guess you want to know what your prognosis is." We didn't really sort of say anything because we were still in a state of shock. He said, "Well, you might only have 2 to 3 years to live." And so I'd gone from being an ultramarathoner to being terminally ill effectively inside a few days, and it was incredible. It turns out that the cancer was actually in every bone in my body from pelvis to skull. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But yeah, the prognosis was obviously devastating. Back then I had a 3-year-old grandson, Ethan, who absolutely dote on each other. And all I could think about was the fact that I'm not going to get to see him become a teenager. Anyway, he was 10 a few last year, and I've now got three more grandchildren, and I feel very blessed to be here and very lucky. But being told you've got cancer is devastating, but being told it's incurable is just indescribable. And then this is the bit where it gets even worse. And I think this is the bit that people who are listening to the podcast really need to understand, is that early stage prostate cancer, when it's caught early, is completely curable. And when it's caught late, once it's spread outside the prostate, usually into the bones or the lymph nodes, it's incurable. And the treatment effectively is to remove male hormone, testosterone, because testosterone feeds prostate cancer,
Wow.
and it's effectively chemical castration. So if you let that sink in, what the impact of that is, it's horrendous. And the side effects were massive for me as both a man and as an athlete, completely emasculating. And I've had to deal with some, horrible side effects. I mean, the first one, weight gain, so I'm back to being Mr. Blobby again, which is not great. You get this ring of visceral fat round your middle. Because you need testosterone to fuel muscle growth, you lose all your muscle mass. You lose bone density, so your bones break more easily. You get hot sweats and hot flushes. So I became much more sympathetic to menopausal ladies than I ever had been before. Fatigue, which is horrendous. I mean, you can go from your battery being full 1 minute to completely flat the next. But then loss of libido and sexual function. The oncologist, when we first met him, said, once you start on this hormone therapy, you won't be able to get an erection again, but it probably won't matter because you won't have any libido either. And I was 60 years old, and you don't think of your sex life as ending at 60.
Oh,
And
sure.
my wife was only 58, but that's effectively what happened. I was chemically castrated, and it was just horrendous.
That's really
And then
interesting about testosterone. I wasn't even aware of that.
yeah, I mean that it feeds prostate cancer, and so they take it away, and it's grim. And then the mental health impact, you can imagine, the anxiety. I get a blood test every 12 weeks, which tells me whether the treatment is still working or not. And you can imagine the blood anxiety that builds up before that. But I unfortunately forgot the message about living life to the full. And I spent the first 18 months living, thinking way too much about dying so much. I thought about dying so much that I lost the joy of living. And I realized I was doing this. My sister was admitted to a hospice for end of life care at the age of 54 for breast cancer. I was having business problems, struggling with my own side effects. I had a basically complete mental breakdown. But I realized that actually seeking help is a sign of strength and not a sign of weakness. So I went for some support, some psychological support. I cried on the shoulder of a caseworker for 2.5 hours and felt so much better. And ever since then, I've lived life to the absolute maximum, tried to get joy out of every day, tried to help a few other people by telling my story and saving some lives. I had private medical insurance back then, so I was very lucky. I avoided chemotherapy, got onto a new drug that was paid for by my insurers, but it also paid for psychosexual therapy, which my wife and I had together, which was wonderful. It reminded us about what a loving relationship was, that it wasn't just about penetrative sex. You could have intimacy without penetrative sex. And it's a real tragedy. It's a real health inequality that that's not available on the NHS as a rule. And as you can imagine, the impact on my life, quality of life, was pretty awful. I can still do everything I used to be able to do. I just can't do it as well. I can't do it for as long. I can't do it as fast. I can't run like I used to do. I went from being a sub-elite athlete to a back-of-the-pack plodder. But then I was absolutely furious. I found out that I had a right to a blood test at the age of 50, and I didn't know. This blood test is very simple. It's called the PSA blood test. It stands for prostate-specific antigen. The prostate kicks this out into your bloodstream, and if you have an elevated level, it's indicative of something going wrong with the prostate. That might be prostate cancer. It might be something else. And I found out I'd had the right to this test from the age of 50. And at the first appointment with the urologist, my wife said, how long do you think Tony's had this cancer developing? And he said, well, because it spreads so far around his body, probably 10 years. If I'd known about that right to that PSA blood test at age 50 and had it every year from 50 to 60, my cancer would have been caught early and I would have been cured. I'd had no symptoms whatsoever in that entire 10-year period until the groin strain started in the February before my diagnosis in the May. And my cancer was, the mass of it was in the pelvic bone. So the groin pain was stress fractures of the pelvis, but it was also in my hips, ribs, spine, neck, and skull. Virtually every bone in the body from pelvis to skull had a tumor in it. And I've got a picture of the scan, and it is horribly, horribly scary. So the message really to people listening to this is if you go and get that PSA blood test and you do have a prostate problem, you have maybe potentially prostate cancer, it can be cured, caught early. Please go and insist on getting that PSA blood test at your GP's, because if I had, I wouldn't be living with a terminal diagnosis now and all those horrible side effects. And there's a story about a friend of mine who I was trying to get as a client of my accountancy practice. He knew my story. His partner knew my story. He was 47 years old. He was your archetypal alpha male, tall, handsome, good looking, great sportsman. And he went to his GP and said, I need a PSA test. And the GP refused because he was too young and had no symptoms, which is really surprising because most men diagnosed early don't have symptoms. I'd had no symptoms. He knew I'd had no symptoms. So he said, look, this guy, Tony, was like, he had no symptoms. So eventually the doctor did the PSA test, and Mike's PSA was 4.7 at diagnosis. It should have been no more than 2. 6 weeks later, did another PSA test, and it had risen to 5.2. That was a 10% increase in 6 weeks. He'd have been dead at the age of 55 if he hadn't had that PSA test at 47. And so he phoned me up one day and said, and I didn't know any of this, he said, thanks for saving my life. I said, I didn't do anything. You did. All you did, you knew my story. So you did something proactive about your prostate health. And that's the message I'm trying to get across by doing what we're doing today.
One of my questions, Tony, was going to be, what can you do as a younger man? You've just answered it there, but I'm 43 years of age now. Can I just go and get blood tests done? Obviously, having to pay for them and that, but is that a good
Well,
option?
the recommendation is for men over 50 should go and have a test. They're entitled to it. And if you go to your GP, they can't refuse you if you insist. Men over 45 with a family history, and black men over 45, because men with a family history are 2.5 times at risk. So my son is now 2.5 times at risk, and black men are at twice the risk of white men. And so you'd struggle to get one younger unless you had symptoms. So quite often I say to people, well, just pretend you've got some symptoms, but shouldn't really say that. But that's the key, really. It's once you're at 50, every year or two, but make sure you know the score on the door, make sure you know what your PSA level is, and then monitor it, because as we get older, our prostate gets bigger, it kicks out more of this antigen into the bloodstream, and therefore your PSA levels rise. And so typically, for a man of my age, PSA should have been no more than 4, and my PSA was 129. So you can imagine that was pretty elevated.
Just clarify again, sorry, what does PSA stand for?
Prostate specific antigen, and the prostate kicks this out into the bloodstream. The next part of my story really was about, I'd had this sort of bit of a nervous breakdown, and I realized that I needed to take control of the cancer rather than be controlled by it. And for me, exercise was vital, and it's been vital. And getting back to running as quickly as possible was really important to me. And I was very lucky because I got this treatment because I had private medical insurance. And that was basically developed here in the UK by the Institute of Cancer Research, from people like you and me donating money to cancer research. And so I thought, well, I need to give something back. So I thought, well, I can still run. I know I'm going to be a lot slower, but what can I do? So I set myself some challenges because fundraising is really important to these charities, especially post-COVID when they lost so much money. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of the daft things that I've done since my diagnosis, not because I want to brag about them, but because I want to try to inspire people to say to them, what can you do to go out and help cancer research that's going to prolong my life? Let me spend more time with my grandchildren. And I say to people, what people said to me, you can't do a marathon when you've got stage 4 cancer. And I go, well, why not? So people were setting barriers for me, and I just said, I'm going to push those barriers back. And that's the message really to get across to people. If people set artificial barriers, if you set yourself artificial barriers, just push them away, because you can do anything you want to if you really put your mind to it. And so I'm going to tell you about just three or four of the things that I've done that I think are quite motivational. I'd qualified for the London Marathon in 2018 with a good for age time for a 60-year-old. And I ummed and ahed about whether I should take the place. I was a year into treatment. I knew it was going to be hell. It was hell. And I knew I couldn't do the training because of the fatigue. And I'd go out for a training run, and after about a mile, I realized it wasn't going to happen today. And I burst into tears, and cancer's robbed me of this, and I'd jog back home. And anyway, it was difficult. So it was the hottest London Marathon on record. I had a massive personal worst. It was 5 hours and 7. My best was 3 hours 23. So you can see it was quite a lot worse than I was used to doing. But it's the one I'm most proud of, because I raised £13,000 for prostate cancer, so that's going to help, the next generations of men and maybe help me. And then the following year, 2019, I decided I was going to try to run 970 miles in the year. Now, in the old days, that was a piece of cake because I was doing 1600 miles a year, doing two marathons. But in the new world, it was really difficult. And I can hear you, I can see your mind whirring there, why 970 and not 1,000? And the reason for the 970 was that that was how many men died of prostate cancer every month in 2019. We lose 12,000 men a year, now it's 1,000 a month. And I wanted to run 1 mile for each of those men, and that's what I did. By the end of the year, it had risen to 1,000. Then in 2021, I completed a 100-kilometer ultramarathon. They lied, it was 103 kilometers, but that's what race organizers do. I had to do it over 2 days because I simply wasn't strong enough to do it over do it as a straight run. I did it with an overnight camp stop. So 36 miles on day one, 28 miles on day two. Day two involved about 100 yards of running, which was a sprint finish at the end, and the rest of it was power walking. And I raised again thousands of pounds for charity. And then 2022, I'm a trustee of a charity called the Move Charity that basically supports teenagers and young adults living with cancer to get them moving again. Because movement is really important for everybody, not just for people living with cancer, but even more important for people like me. And so I decided I was going to try to run at least 5 kilometres every day for 365 days. I set off on the 1st of January. I had to have 3 days off because I tested positive for COVID. So I extended it until the 3rd of January. So I still did the 365 days. I averaged 3.8 miles and I raised £21,000, which is a quarter of that charity's budget.
Amazing.
So despite the fact people like me are living with stage four cancer, lots of us are still capable of doing remarkable things. And if I can do remarkable things, anybody can do remarkable things. And that's really the message to get across with the most important message of this talk is to say to people, do something proactive about your prostate health once you're in the risk groups. Men over 50, men over 45 with a family history, black men over 45, go and get your PSA blood test done at the GPs because I don't want you to end up like me.
Yeah, that's amazing, Tona. Amazing. I mean, you see it kind of, there are a few examples that I can think of off the top of my head who people are dealing with incurable diseases who, with a shift of mindset, go on to achieve remarkable things like yourself, running the marathons, doing the 5K days, doing ultra marathons. It doesn't have to be a barrier as long as you've got that mindset switch.
And it doesn't have to be a marathon. What for me was a marathon might be somebody else just going out for a long walk. I think even just doing a daily walk is a challenge for some people. And for some people, seated exercise. I use the word movement deliberately when I talked about the Move Charity. It's not necessarily about exercise, it's about movement.
Yeah.
So you can actually do exercise, seated exercise. Any exercise is beneficial. But I think particularly people living with cancer, when they're going through a treatment cycle, it can be really difficult. So you're having chemo on a 3 week cycle. The first week you feel pretty grotty, apparently. Second week you feel a lot better, and third week you feel quite normal. So weeks two and three you can do a bit more. And I think I so far have managed to avoid chemo, so I don't really know much about it. But for me, the biggest thing was the lack of testosterone. I went from being a sub 20 minute 5K runner and struggling to get under 30 minutes. And that was the impact. My wife said, once you started on the hormone treatment, you aged 10 years in 1 year. And that was the impact. And that's the harsh reality. I became, instead of a 61-year-old, I became a 71-year-old because of the treatment. But I've not let it stop me doing stuff. I've tried my best to, after that first 18 months of a blip, I've tried to live a proper life to the full. Try to get joy out of every day. And I think that there's a moral in that, isn't there, really? It's don't wait until you get this dread diagnosis before you really start living life.
Yeah, of course. It's easy to say, in it kind of seize the day, but with no kind of motivation, you wonder what is going to get people actually trying to do that. And
Yeah,
unfortunately,
absolutely.
sometimes it takes something like what you've been through to get people to realize that.
And I think if people get the message from this, don't wait, just do it now. If you want to go and do something remarkable, do it now. If you can raise some money for Prostate Cancer UK, even better still.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate your time this morning. Is there anything else you want to just clarify or add before we finish?
No, I just think that with the PSA blood test has had a bit of a bad rap in the press and medically, and that's generally because GPs have not kept up to date with the diagnostic process. In the old days, if you had a raised PSA, they did transrectal biopsy that could lead to infection and all sorts of complications. Nowadays, if you have a raised PSA, they do a multiparametric MRI scan before they do a biopsy, and then they can do it very targeted. They don't do them transrectally anymore, so the risk of infection is massively reduced. But unfortunately, our GPs haven't caught up with all this yet, and so some GPs have died in the wool. The PSA test does more harm than good, but it's the only way we can start the diagnostic process at the moment. And without having that blood test, you could end up like me. Don't end up like me.
Brilliant, Tony. I'll put all the links to some of the charities you've mentioned in the notes below the video and the podcast, and that's so people can check them out as well. Well, appreciate your time this morning, mate. Thank you very much for sharing your amazing story.
Thanks, David. Good to speak to you. See you soon.
Cheers, Tony. Thank you.